Hi, my name's Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter.
Thank you for tuning in to our new radio show, the Catskill Cabin Conversations, that is to be aired on the third of Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m.
Each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them to their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know them that little bit better. Today on the show, we have Chris Hack, co-owner of the Spinning Room Bar and Restaurant in Tannersville, New York. Chris, thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, mate.
So how's your weekend going so far?
So far, so good. Bow season just ended. Rifle season starts today. Deer on the move. Snow's coming. Winter season's about to be here. Good time to be up here in the mountains.
Yeah. I'm not a hunter, I have to say. I'm a city boy, but I appreciate the enthusiasm that people are looking forward to the hunting season. But
I appreciate that they thin out the deer population so I don't have to do it with my car.
Yeah, I just missed a deer last week by inches. I was telling Chris on the way here that, I just missed one last week, and he said the best way to do it is just to put the pedal to the metal and hit it, because if you don't, and you're going too slow, it could come straight into the windscreen. Am I right in saying that?
Really? You're right. The general rule of thumb is if you're going to hit a deer, don't hit the brakes, hit the gas.
Yeah, nail it.
Okay. I don't know if I would actually use that rule, but that's what they tell me.
I'm an animal lover.
Yeah, no kidding. I hit one in the spring. It's one of these, it was like this little deer, really, kind of gaunt and malnourished because it was maybe April or May, so they hadn't eaten in months. And, just clip it with my headlight, $2,500 damage to the car. And, dumb things.
Lucky for me, I've never hit one. I've had one hit me, but I've never hit one with my car, and I guess that's what you get for being a hunter. You spend your whole day out there looking for them, and you can't find them, and everybody else just finds them with the front end of their car.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, Chris, you're also on the Board of Trustees in the village of Tannersville, and you've lived there for the past 18 years?
Yeah, give or take 18 years. I've done some traveling and lived in other places here in the country, but Tannersville's been home for about 18 years or so.
And how did you decide to get onto the board?
It was actually a friend of mine. I've thought about running for election in the village just because I've got a vested stake there, and I plan on living there the rest of my life. But it was a friend of mine that wanted to run for mayor that actually got me to run on his ticket as trustee with him. And it turns out I won the election. He didn't. And I've been on the board ever since.
No kidding.
I bet he loves you for that, doesn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Chris, in these harsh economic times, your bar, the Spinning Room, it seems to be going really well. It seems to be flourishing. I've seen a lot of businesses come and go. What's the secret? What do you think's the secrets of having a good business and what essentially is a small populated place, Tannersville?
It's an easy formula. You got to give the people what they want. This is my second business that I've owned, and in the bar industry. And it's also the second time I've ended up making money not doing what I expected to be doing.
Right.
We originally opened up a lounge in Kingston back in 2003, me and my friend Jason that wanted to run for mayor.
The guy that hates you now.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And we opened it up. It was, we expected it to be a nice high-end kind of martini lounge type of place.
Yeah.
And quickly we learned that our demographic didn't want that. Sooner than later, we turned it into a live music venue and had rock and roll bands and the sort coming in, and
right,
that worked out really
right.
well for us. And
excellent.
The same thing with the bar we have now, the Spinning Room in Tannersville. In the wintertime, it's a big nightclub destination. Back in the day, there were tons of nightclubs and bars everywhere, and that's still kind of the scene. So when I first got in, that's what we attempted. We attempted to be a nightclub, and it didn't take us long to realize that there was not much of a need for that, but there was a need for just a simple bar with decent food and good beer, and that's been making us money now ever since.
Yeah, and certainly you do have really good food. I've tasted it myself, and you have won a couple of awards, haven't you?
We have won a few awards. The Buckaroo Burger, we have second year in a row, top 10 burgers in New York State, as per the New York Beef Council. And just recently, we did the Hunter Mountain Wing Festival, where we took down best hot sauce, best garlic and best wing overall with our chicken and waffles wing.
Yeah, fantastic.
Just out of curiosity, what is on the Buckaroo Burger?
The Buckaroo Burger is simple in its beauty. It's two mozzarella sticks covered in barbecue sauce, bacon cheeseburger, onion rings on top of that.
Nice.
I can feel my innards and my heart starting to flutter as I listen there.
What do you like most about owning your own place?
The hours. Even though I sleep on the weirdest schedule, it's nice to be able to work hard when you want to and not work hard when you don't want to, especially now that I'm a hunter. It takes a lot of time, you know, so it allows me during the hunting season to be able to kind of make my own schedule and spend as much time in the woods as I'd like to.
Right.
Luckily, it's in the in-between season for us as well.
Sure.
Now, am I right in saying that I've seen you dressed up as a historical figure. Could you explain who that is?
Yes, thanks to you, Andy. I can now add Abraham Lincoln impersonator to my resume.
Well, I have to say, you did look astonishingly like, and you spoke very well as Abraham Lincoln.
It was a very enjoyable thing, and since I did it with you, I've done it a few more times, and I recycled the costume for Halloween, and we went down to the city, and I was Abraham Lincoln down
awesome.
In the city.
Brilliant.
And it was very well received by most.
Is this something that you'll maybe consider doing in the future?
Perhaps.
Yeah, because I think, you know, when you're a tall guy and you know you're slim, and when you do dress up, you do look very, very like Abraham Lincoln. So I think it's a potential career there as an impersonator, you know.
Well, I haven't gotten paid for it yet, so we'll see what kind of career you can make out of it. But it's relatively fun to do.
Just recently, I saw in the news that Ken Burns was talking about the Gettysburg Address and how all Americans should know it and should memorize it. And actually, there was a Pennsylvania newspaper
that
at the time condemned the address. They were like, it was silly and short. And since then, more recently, the business that has taken over the newspaper apologized, and they said, yeah, that was kind of short-sighted.
They did. I think they even published a retraction
100
years later saying that they were wrong.
Whoops.
Well, never too late, you know?
Yep.
Anyway, without further ado, Chris, I've got in front of you a list of the things that you would like to take with you on your Catskill cabin getaway. And the first item that I'm going to talk about is a song, and it's by the Moody Blues, Nights in White Satin. Could you tell us why that you chose that song?
As a kid, my mom listened to music all the time. She had all sorts of music going on, usually everything from, you know, Bach, Mozart, country music, mm-hmm. Kenny Rogers, Dolly Parton, and I'd say the Moody Blues was the closest thing to rock and roll that my mom played when I was young. And so that was one of the first songs that really stuck to me as a kid. I played it all the time when she wasn't around. I'd ruin the needle on the record, putting stuff like that on. And I don't know, it's so different than a lot of the music you hear from that period of time, even up till now. It's really haunting, kind of strange song.
Yes.
And it stuck with me because recently I've heard it a lot on the radio. And on the radio, there was an explanation as to the guy that wrote it and what it was all about, and it was literally about the fact that the guy had just been given satin sheets as a gift.
Really? No kidding.
And for a song that's so deep and, you know, so haunting and sounds so in depth. It's really, the guy just got satin sheets for a gift and turned it into a song, and that was the end
Brilliant.
Of the story.
Well, what was going to, what we should do now is listen to the song, and then we can maybe talk a little about it after, okay?
Perfect.
Nights in White Satin Bedsheets by Moody Blues. Thank you.
nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you. Some try to tell me thoughts they cannot defend. Just what you want to be, you will be in the end. And I love you.
Listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. You can reach us on the internet at www, all the W's, you know the score, WGXC.com. And you can find us on Facebook, and I'm sure you know how to get there. That was the Moody Blues, Nights in White Satin. Chris, when you hear that song, can you still smell the vinyl when you put it on? Because I know you mentioned earlier that you remember the needle on the record player and stuff. Can you still visualise and smell records, new records?
Not so much as my mom's face when she walked into the room and realised I was messing with the record player.
Get that off!
Yeah, I had a really good habit of playing with that thing a lot. I might have been ahead of my time because I loved moving the records around and making the noises and playing them backwards and messing around with that whole thing. Dear. And, I think to break me of those habits, my mom showed me what a orchestra conductor was, and I had a little stool. And I must have been 5 years old at this time. And I would, so she gave me a little stick and showed me what an orchestra conductor was. So I stopped playing with the record player, and she would put on records, and I would stand on my little stool, and I would just be the conductor all day long.
So you were an aspiring conductor.
And DJ.
And now you're conducting a bar.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you've become a conductor then, of sorts.
Of sorts.
Brilliant. Now, just staying on with your mum, I see one of the things you've put on your list there is your mum's cheesecake recipe. Now, why did you put that there?
I'm not much of a cook or a baker for that matter.
Oh, wait a minute. I've tasted your burgers.
I think they won awards or something, right?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's more junk food. Everybody can do that. Everybody can open up the fridge and scrap something together. But, I was like sitting down trying to think of things I would want to do on my cabin getaway. I've never used her cheesecake recipe, but I love it. Everyone I know loves it. And I thought that would be a good way to pass some time in the cabin, make a cheesecake, ruin it, try again, ruin it. And I don't know how long my getaway's for, but I figure by the end of the time, I might actually be able to get one out of the oven that actually comes out right.
So what's the ingredients?
Honestly, I've never made it. I don't know. I know there's a lot of cream cheese and a lot of sugar in it, but it's one of my mom's recipes I've never tried before. So that was the main reason why.
So is that one of the things you look forward to when you go home?
You know, it's been a long time since she's made it. She kind of plays pseudo mom. I've got a couple nephews that she spends all of her time with and spoils way more than she ever spoiled me. So, yeah, she hasn't baked much. So it'd also be nice for me to maybe bring her one of her cheesecakes so that she doesn't have to do the work.
Uh-huh.
Very nice.
Mike, you do that, don't you? Every time I go to your house, there's a batch of your mother's baking.
Oh, it's outstanding. It seems, I don't know if I'm the only one, but it's I find my mom, my grandma make the best food in the entire world. And other people make some good food, and I don't know if it's just being a son, your mom's cooking is always the best, or if my mom and grandma genuinely do make the best food ever.
Well, my mom and dad's soup, I love their soup,
yeah.
You know, and my mom used to make rice pudding, and she started doing it, and I obviously really enjoyed it. Was putting prune juice in the rice, gorgeous. So yeah, I think you're right. You know, everybody's mum's home cooking tastes incredibly heartwarming, and that memory stays with you. You know.
Yeah, I'm not actually. You know, I feel like when I was a kid, I hated my mom's cooking, and I think only as we grew further away from each other. The food got better because it does remind me of a simpler time.
You're just a sentimental old fool, Chris.
Sorry, Mom. I love your cooking.
Also here, Chris, you've been a snowboard instructor for a number of years.
Yeah, that was the bane of my existence for a very long time, since we're on the subject of my mother. When I was a kid growing up in Catskill, New York, all of my friends were skiers. I was probably 11 at the time. So I came home one day, Mom, I want to ski. Okay, we'll figure it out. We didn't have much money, but she figured it out. And we went to the store to buy skis so I could be on the school program and learn how to be a skier like all my friends. And not 5 minutes into being there, there's a snowboard hanging on the wall. I never heard of snowboarding, but I rode a skateboard at the time. That's what me and all my friends did. And she points right at it and goes, you sure you don't want that? That seems like exactly what you would want to do. Come on, Mom. My friends ski. I want to be a skier. Bought the skis, joined the program. Hated it. Hated it so much.
How come? What was it about skiing that you didn't care for?
It's hard to explain. It was my first real experience with being out on the snow. You know, even though I grew up in Catskill, Hunter Mountain was a short drive away. I didn't even know ski resorts were around. To me, skiing was something I watched on the Olympics, CBS Sports and that sort of thing. I had no idea it existed so close to us. So, I was very unprepared. I didn't have the proper clothing or the training, so it was a pretty miserable experience for me. So, sure enough, the next year I ended up on a snowboard and fell in love with it. Haven't stopped doing it ever since. It's taken me, I've moved out west, I've lived in Colorado, California, I've made a living off of it, and it probably kept me out of a lot of trouble too when I was a kid. It's definitely something that's shaped my persona and something that I'll definitely hold on to forever.
Nice.
Is that maybe something you would go back to be a coach of snowboarding? And given that you stay a stone's throw from the mountain?
At this point, I don't think so. When I was coaching, I'm only a few years removed from actually coaching. But since I stopped coaching and bought the bar, I realized that my skills diminished very quickly when I wasn't riding every day.
You're getting old, son.
It's true. It's very true. I feel like I just turned into an adult like in the past week because my views on everything have changed so fast.
Can I ask you a question? Do you groan when you get out of a seat?
Not yet. Oh. Not too bad. Sorry, Andy. I'm right behind you, though.
I'm on my own here.
I do a little.
Sometimes just for effect, depending on who's around.
When you've eaten too much cheesecake.
Or that, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, right. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. We have in the studio with us Chris Hack, who is the co-owner of the Spinning Room Bar. Chris, you've got on your list playing cards. why do you want to bring playing cards to the? Well, I think the reason's obvious that you want to play some cards, but.
And the reasons are obvious, and I thought playing cards just deserved their moment for discussion. It's there to me. That's one of the more amazing inventions ever. I don't know the history of it, but they don't seem to have changed for a very long time.
Yeah,
there's a myriad of games. Everybody's got their game. Some people play spades. Some people play rummy. Some people play solitaire. You know, the uses are endless. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I used to just set up a hat and pitch cards, you know, and just try to throw them in the hat. And that in itself
and
was hours of entertainment.
If you don't want to play a game, you can build a house.
And you can, exactly.
What's your favorite card game?
We play. So it's a simple one, you know, Texas Hold'em.
Yep.
It's a great game. It deserves all the publicity that it has right now. I've played a lot of different types of poker, and it really is. The simplicity, the strategy, the entire everything about the game. It really is a lot of fun, and I know you agree with me.
Yeah, I love playing poker.
But Rummy 500, that was like the first real game my grandmother taught me when I was a kid. I've probably spent more time playing Rummy as a kid with her than I have as an adult playing poker. That's all we used to do.
Yeah.
You know, we'd had days where we would play Rummy 1500 because we wanted to play, you know, we enjoyed it so much that we would just set these high goals and just play and play, or, you know, finish the day, come back the next day, pick up where we left off. You know, cards that, you know, if I had to be alone for any period of time, that would be the number one thing I would bring with me.
Yeah, so would you play, like, solitaire?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I'm sure if you sat alone with them long enough, you make up your own game with them.
Well, one of the favorite games I like to play is cribbage. I love playing cribbage. Now, the beauty of cribbage is you can play two, three, or four-handed. You know, you can play with two or three, four people. But what I realized and found out about 6 months ago is you can play cribbage solitaire. And that made my day when I found that. I was right on it on the internet, Googled, you know, cribbage solitaire, learned the rules. And that's one of the games that I would be playing if I was on my own playing cards, you know. So, yeah, cribbage. Mike? Do you want to take something over?
Sure. Another song you have listed, Chris, is The Thrill Is Gone by B.B. King and Tracy Chapman. What do you like about that song? Why is that important to you? Why would you bring that with you to a cabin in the Catskills?
It's two artists that I've always really liked. Tracy Chapman doesn't have, like, the deepest library. B.B. King obviously does.
Sure.
But two artists that if you listen to them separately, you would never kind of put them in the same category. But the fact that they came together and did a song like this, you know, it's a great song. And the pairing of the two, lyrically, it's just, you know, it's one of the few songs that actually speaks to me. You know, it's powerful. It's two different generations coming together and bringing blues music, you know, to a point where, you know, it's almost accessible for everyone of all ages, because most people my age or younger would absolutely have heard Tracy Chapman before, but maybe not have been exposed to B.B. King so much.
And that's a travesty, because B.B. King is, you know, if you look up the dictionary, you look up the word blues in the dictionary, it should say, or it does say, see B.B. King. The guy's, you know, I was listening to him last night, and the hairs in the back of my neck were standing on end.
Yep.
Just phenomenal guitar playing, phenomenal voice, brilliant energy and emotion, and especially in his younger days, fantastic. Shall we listen to the song?
Absolutely. Here it is, The Thrill Is Gone, by B.B. King and Tracy Chapman.
Baby.
We just listened to The Thrill Is Gone by B.B. King and Tracy Chapman.
What an artist, B.B. King. I was in the B.B. King House of Blues in New York a few years ago.
I've been to a few shows down there.
Brilliant place. I went to see Robert Cray, and the band were phenomenal. Robert Cray was phenomenal. The picking in his guitar technique was fantastic. His voice was fantastic. It was almost like listening to a young B.B. King. And I'm sure he was very much influenced by B.B. King. But when going back to B.B. King, I was listening last night to, I thought, right, I'll listen to the song again and acquaint myself with the song and B.B. And I ended up watching a two-hour special on B.B. King. It was in 2006 that the band get back together again after a 13-year hiatus. And it was just phenomenal, you know, to see it. And the guy was 81 then. I'm sure, you know, he's about 88 now.
Right.
And he's still doing it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. Few artists like that where it just, you know, it just comes out of them. You know, he could probably just carry a guitar around, play music, and sing songs about everything that's going on around him, and it would just sound great and make sense.
Yeah.
Every time I turn it on my Pandora radio, put that channel on, just sucked in.
Yeah.
Listen to it for hours.
The man was definitely put on the planet to play the blues and entertain people. And phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
Phenomenal
and there's talent. Not too many people that their guitar is nearly as famous as them.
Yes. one being, I would say, Trigger, which is Willie Nelson's
very
guitar, which has fallen to pieces, but probably worth hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Chris, another thing you would bring with you to your Catskill cabin is a sketch pad. You like to draw? Do you do watercolor?
In school, I was an artist. It was one of the career paths I was about to choose. At the time, I was going to go to college for art. I coincidentally ended up dropping out of high school and since got my GED. But at the time, art...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much. I was going to go to college for art, and I just recently kind of broke out all of my old artwork. My mom dropped off a big box of all the things that I did in high school, and it reminded me, it was almost a part of my life that I'd forgotten about completely, an oil painting and a bunch of sketches and things like that. So given the time that my Catskill cabin getaway would allow me, you know, it would be nice to kind of get back and draw and see if any of that is still in me. I can't say that I've been creative in that way since high school. And a journal, too, is something that I've really wanted to get into with my hunting, especially, you know, a lot goes on out there that is easily forgotten that I wouldn't want to, you know. And it's been my goal to kind of have a daily log of all my hunting adventures. One, just for the memories, and two, because it pays, you know, year after year you forget things. So, you know, it's like recently I remembered that I had a big buck come under my stand last year, and I wanted, you know, I've been trying so hard to remember what point of the season that was, just to get an idea of the difference between the two seasons, and not having a journal of that type kind of is regrettable. And I unfortunately took a shortcut this year, and instead of actually having a journal, I bought a GoPro, which is like the little point of view HD cameras that you see on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's a brilliant little piece of equipment. I just, you know, it's attached to my bow, or I would strap it to my head.
Yeah.
So rather than actually have a writing journal, which would be a little bit more creative, I film everything.
Nice.
I film absolutely everything that's going on out in the woods. And there's a lot of footage of me just kind of walking around snotty-nosed and tired and freezing. But every now and then I do get some cool footage of wildlife and just waterfalls and scenery and stuff out there. And I end up in a lot of places where people don't go at all anymore. So it's cool to bring back that kind of footage and show people where I'm at.
Yeah.
It sounds like, you know, very similar to some of the landscape painters who would come to... for instance,
Thomas Cole,
Catskill right. Falls. You know, yeah. They would, Mike, Thomas Cole, and Frederick
Church
and Durand would go into the cove, and latterly Thomas Locker, and these people would go into places that a lot of people would never venture into and paint the images. It sounds like, you know, with the technology, you are attempting to do that, I feel like, again.
A friend of mine watching some of my hunting videos called me an artist, because if I do see like a cool cliff or a weird rock formation, I'll put my camera down and I'll go stand on it and, you know, pull my bow or, you know, just do something silly. But it's not where a lot of people are going to go, and there's very few people going out there and bringing those images back out. Although it's land that we all own, it's all state park land, everybody can go out there. Some of it's treacherous, and I'm not exactly walking on the regular trails and stuff too. But I've also been surprised at the amount of human sign I do find in some random places. If I wanted to, I could have a Budweiser can collection from the very first can to the most modern can, because there are Budweiser beer cans everywhere you go in the woods.
I wonder why people are so disrespectful to the wondrous places that we do have. You know, I drive down Catskill Falls, you've mentioned, you know, you cut through the woods and places where you think maybe you're the first person ever to have tread on, and you see a pop can and you're like, you know what?
Oh.
You know, why don't you just put that in your bag? Because it came from your bag. Put it back in your rucksack and take it back.
I get really, there's a lot of trash out there, and I do my best to bring a lot of it back. I'm at a point now where it's so comforting sometimes when you're out in the woods for hours and you haven't talked to anybody and you haven't seen anything. The beer cans now, to me, are almost the same as graffiti or, you know, the bathroom door, I was here, yeah, that type of thing. And I've stopped picking them up because it's almost part of the landscape now, you know. Sure. And although I don't drink when I hunt because I have a hard enough time hitting the side of a barn with a bow, it's part of that culture. And as a kid, you know, that's what I thought of as hunters, is guys in red checkered jackets, orange hats, shotguns, and beers in their hands, you know. And that might have been part of what led me to not become a hunter till later in life. But now it's interesting to see the cans in the weird places that you end up. And when I finally do find that place where there aren't any of those things, I'll know that's my spot. And maybe I should bring a beer can and leave it there, because that'll be my thing.
Well, come back to the, you know, your sketching. Could it be something that you could use to, you know, to express your art, is to, you know, draw a montage of litter, or, you know,
even photograph. I've thought about that. I actually had one point in my life where I wanted to bring a camera around with me because I thought roadkill was so interesting that I was going to just, you know, we see plenty of it around here. Mm-hmm. And I was going to start a photo log of just roadkill, not to be completely morbid or anything, but to just give those animals one last life, if you will.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amount, you know, a lot of people don't get to see many animals unless they're dead on the side of the road, you know. So that interests me. And the same thing with the beer cans too, you know. It would be interesting to just go around. At first I wanted to collect them just to see how many different types of Budweiser cans I could find. And for some reason, they're 99% always Budweiser.
Yeah.
this program is not sponsored by Budweiser.
On the cans it says, preferably disposed in the woods randomly. Please dispose responsibly in the woods. And I think a lot of this stuff is so fascinating, and I you know, being kind of an historian, I look back and I see how humanity has handled various issues, you know, slavery and women's rights and the rights of minorities, and for a time these things were very well accepted, and I wonder if in the future, looking back, people will be kind of mortified by how we treat animals, by roadkill, by all the litter. Because when you step back and look at it, you know, this animal that, you know, ran across the road was living and breathing and had a life, and then it was killed and just left there. And in and of itself, that is odd. And, I don't know, maybe something.
And one of the reasons why it was killed in the first place is because we decided to put a road in its path.
Yeah.
So, you know, we as a society feel that it's a consequence of living where we live and where the animals grew up.
Yeah.
But we I've put these roads in the animals' paths.
Yeah.
So it's inevitable it's they're going to die.
It's interesting for me, too, because, you know, it's only my second year being a big game hunter, and people ask, why do you hunt? You know, and the obvious answer is population control. Sure. But really the only reason why there's a need for population control is because we're taking away their places to live, you know. Yeah. So it's a weird thing, you know. It's like I feel like I'm doing the right thing by hunting because I'm eating the meat and I'm using the animal and I'm saving you from crashing into them when they cross the road. But at the same time, had we not overpopulated the entire area, these animals could just go and live their lives and not have any issues.
I think this is going to be a big issue in the 20th century is coming to terms with our expansion, you know, humanity's expansion and how we can best get along with the rest of the earth without, you know, use our resources, use them responsibly, but not eradicate things.
Yes.
And, you know, responsible hunting, conservation, this is important.
Just for the record, Chris is sitting at the moment wearing a mink coat.
Leather shoes. Leather gloves.
Only joking, folks. Now, that takes us on to one of your other items that you would take to the cabin with you, and that's a recurve bow. What is a recurve bow? I don't know what a recurve bow is.
Most people you encounter these days that hunt with a bow, they're going to have a compound bow, which has a cam on it. So when you pull it back, you can hold that. You know, my bow has 70 pounds of weight when you pull it back. So what the cam does is it kind of releases, you know, it takes some of that pressure off. So you can hold that string back and have time. Because once you fire that arrow, it's going at about 300 feet per second. Pretty fast,
right?
You know, whereas a recurve bow is what everybody's kind of used to seeing on television and the Hunger Games, the bow that the girl uses, which is just pull back, shoot. There's no holding it. And there's no aiming. You know, it's all intuitive. Whereas with my bow, there's high-tech little gadgets all over it that are helping me either dampen vibration or aim. You know, I can hit a target with my bow at 60 yards, 40 yards, 30 yards with these little pins that are more or less like a scope, if you will, allowing me to know exactly where that arrow is going to go. Whereas with a recurve, there's none of that. It's pure instinct, pure talent. And to me, that's, you know, the truest form. So if I can get to a point where I can actually hunt and harvest an animal with one of those, I know I'm doing it the right way.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And giving the animal its fair chance. Even though they have all the advantages out there anyway.
Well, what I was going to say is these new bows, you know, they really do take the sport out of sport.
It's very easy, but yet very difficult at the same time. Like I said, 2 years big game hunting. I just harvested my first doe this year. That's the only animal I've even hit with my arrow, with my bow and arrow, and that is not from lack of trying.
And with this, you said it's a 70-pound bow. I mean, are you pulling back with 70 pounds of force?
More or less, until you get through that cam,
and
that cam kind of takes a lot of the weight off, and then you have an actual, you know, you're attached to it with a release with a trigger on it. So you pull back, and you're holding it, finding your aim, and then when you're ready, you pull a trigger just like a gun, and that's what lets the
sure. And is that like the kind of the top of the line as far as bows go, and the force?
Yeah, 70 pounds is about average. I don't know of anybody that goes above that.
Mm-hmm.
That gets an arrow going to pretty much anywhere you want it to go.
Nice. Mm. Yeah, really cool.
It's amazing technology that I'm still learning about, but. With everything hunting, you know, the bow is certainly the most fun for me. It's nice to be able to miss and possibly have a second chance. Whereas with a gun, if you miss, you're done for the day in that area.
Would you ever consider picking up shotgun or muzzleloader?
Oh, I do. I have firearms. You know, rifle season started today. I'm working all weekend, so I won't get out till Monday. Mm-hmm. But all of last year, big game hunting, I was out just as much as I was with my bow. I didn't fire a single bullet. It's a different time of the season, and I didn't see anything. I didn't see any bucks or whatever, but, you know, it's definitely a lot easier when you're out on public land and you're not sure who else is out there with you and everything else.
You have to be careful.
You know, the arrows are a little bit easier, you know.
You know, as a Scotsman, this concept of hunting is very alien to me. I mean, when there is talk of guns in Glasgow, where I'm from, It's usually juxtaposed with the word gangster. Gangsters are the guys with the shotguns. Hunting doesn't take place in Glasgow. And when I'm in my house and I very often hear shotgun fire, and are driving down the road and I see a truck with a deer hanging off the back. I'm used to it now, but it was very, very alien to me when I first came here, and I was like, wow, there's a lot of guns here. Yeah.
the simple fact that I hunt is strange, because as a child, my mom was completely against it. I assume there were a few rifles in the house when I was a kid. I never saw them. And my brother and I were not allowed to play with any type of gun whatsoever. Squirt gun, cap gun. I remember one Christmas Eve, somebody gave me a gun that shot ping pong balls, like the most harmless thing in the whole world. And that disappeared in a heartbeat. My mom kept me away from them completely. And I didn't own my own gun until just this past year for the first time.
Yeah. Well, you seem to have taken to it because you obviously love the idea of going out. And am I right in saying it's not just about going out and hunting for you? I think you love the scenery. I think you love walking around in the wilderness and enjoying the beauty and the majesty of it.
It's an amazing adventure every time, whether you see animals or not. And before I started hunting, you know, I live in the middle of Catskill State Park, one of the most beautiful places in all the world, and it's mine and yours. We own it. But if you called me up one day and said, hey, we're going to go hike to the top of this mountain, I couldn't be bothered. But as soon as you throw some camouflage and a face mask and a weapon into the mix, suddenly it's an adventure. Whether that weapon ever gets used for anything or not, you know, your adrenaline's pumping. You know, every step is, you know, what's it going to bring?
There's possibilities.
What's over that ridge? What's over that ridge? So, yeah, it definitely changed my outlook on the area and gave me a really good reason to go out and explore. And I also, I heard something recently, maybe in a hunting magazine I was reading or whatever, but I didn't realize that there's scientific facts that the way our brains work changes the minute we enter the woods. You know, it's like a primal instinct comes out in us, and our adrenaline flows a little bit more, and our senses are all heightened, and our focus changes. Wow. Whether we're hunting or not, just being in the woods, because
we're evolved from that. At my house, I've got 5 acres of land, and the minute I go into the woods, my senses are heightened, because you don't know if there's going to be a mountain lion above you,
right,
or a black bear further along, and you know, that just happens to be crossing your path,
or even
with cubs. Even
you walk for 15 minutes, get distracted by something, you're turned around, you don't know where you're going, you know, even in your own backyard. I can't tell you.
I actually would know where I'm going, because I watch Survivor Man, so I know how to get back
nice
and eat insects.
I've gotten into backpacking in the past few years, and you know, staying at lean-tos and in tents and things, but I always stick to the trail, and I find that it's a really therapeutic, reinvigorating experience being out in the woods. But I can't imagine just going blindly without trail markers and gear. And I think that absolutely takes some brains and some talent and some experience. And how do you prepare for that going into the woods?
I'm not the most prepared person. And I hunt a lot of places where trails are clearly marked. And I prefer those areas because I have gotten lost quite a few times. Even when I'm on the side of a mountain that has a lot of trails, you know, I'm going off those trails into areas where I know I'm completely surrounded by trails. And I still get turned around, and I'll come out and be like, I had no idea this is where I was going to come out. So I save myself a lot of that just by staying in areas where I know no matter which way I go, for a while, I'm going to come to something I know and be able to find my way out. Even if I'm a few hours out of my way, I know I'm not going to get lost. I'm not so good with bringing maps and compasses and those things with me. So I rely on the trail systems. There's tons of them around, you know.
Sure.
Where I spend a lot of my time hunting is at the top of Cortina Mountain, which is an old ski resort right in Haines Falls. And there's snowmobile trails that go through there. The state has tons of them. You know, they really value the use of a snowmobile. So there's really nowhere in New York State you probably can't go on a snowmobile, and you'd be surprised where they have these trails. So there's a whole 7.8-mile loop at the top of this mountain by High Peak where you can get lost all you want and never really be in danger of being lost, because if you're in the center of this loop, no matter which way you go, you're eventually going to come out onto the trail and be able to find your way back home.
Yeah.
And I learned that by deciding one morning very early, you know, I'm on this loop all the time. I'm going to walk this whole loop, having no idea how long it takes a human being to walk 7.6 miles, especially in pseudo rough terrain. It's not really a walking trail since it's meant for snowmobiles. And I set off on the adventure, and it ended up taking me about 5.5 hours. But the whole time being very unsure where I was going to come out. There were a few other trails that met up with it. I wasn't really sure which trail I should take to get out of there. And it had about hour four where I thought I had about an hour left to get back to where I was if I was on the right trail. I encountered a very nice woman with a trail map who was on her way to hike to the top of High Peak. And I realized I was very close to a trailhead where there was a lot of people. And once I stopped and listened, I could hear people hiking on the mountain. And it startled me because I just hadn't seen people all morning. It had probably been, you know, 7 hours since I had seen anybody. And here's this woman in her shorts walking up the trail. And I'm like, oh, my God, you startled me. And she's like, how do you think I feel? You're covered in camouflage with a bow and arrow over your shoulder.
Thing.
Fair enough. I'm probably scared.
You should have wasn't a mirage. All of a sudden, a woman in shorts.
It's a miracle. You mentioned snowmobile trails. In Western New York, where I grew up, there was a snowmobiling culture. Kids would wear ski-doo jackets to school, ride their snowmobiles to school in the winter. And around here, I haven't really seen that very much. Do people own snowmobiles?
It exists here. It's a little bit lower key, but I remember when we had the 7-foot snowstorm a couple years ago.
Yeah,
everything was shut down. You know, it was insane. And I had a lot of people, you know, we opened the bar. It's, you know, it was easy for us to kind of set up some car batteries and get some stuff running. So for a couple of days while they were cleaning up that storm, we were the only people open in town. And we ended up building a bonfire right outside the door, right on basically Main Street Tannersville for the whole weekend. And I was blown away by the amount of people that were on snowmobiles to get around and how thankful they were, because there was, you know, they were coming from all over the place, you know, mostly just recreational, but the bonfire attracted them like moths to light. And we had snowmobiles parked outside everywhere just because it was the only place around to just kind of hang out and get warm because everything was shut down. And it is, it's a huge part of the culture up here. I think it's just, you don't see it so much because there's so many places in the woods that you can go that it's not so much when there's snow on the ground. You don't see them literally going up and down the street.
Yeah. I've heard them, actually. Just as you say, you don't see them, you hear them.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking, you've obviously talked extensively about hiking and in the mountains. So this may sound like a daft question, but what do you like most? One thing that you like most about the Catskills?
Living up here, you know, you could say hunting, you could say snowboarding, but what I really enjoy about living up here is just like the people. You know, the mountains start going up, the towns are obviously going to get smaller because you can only put such a big town on top of a small mountain.
Sure.
And no matter if you get along with the people you live around or not, you're kind of all on the same team. You know, you're dealing with the same weather conditions, you're dealing with the same tourists, you're dealing with the same economy. So when you narrow it down to the small group of people that live in the village of Tannersville, you know, it's like a little family. And, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people say that about their little town and everything else. But, you know, it really is. It's comforting to know something about just about everybody that you encounter in a day. And you know that if you're in a jam, most of those people are going to help you out, and likewise, you know. So it's the community that really draws me to the area. I've lived in Colorado for a while, in Vail, and I lived in Mammoth, California, and all similar areas to this, you know, small town, ski resort, close to a major city. And I never, you know, it may just be the New Yorker in me, but I never felt the same connections in those places as I did here.
Right. So you like the comfort of the closeness of the towns.
For sure.
Sure. Excellent. Well, you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. You can reach us online at wgxe.com, and you can find us on Facebook. Chris, we're now going to listen to your final song that you chose, which is The Doors' This Is The End. And we kind of left that to the end, obviously because of the title
as
of the song.
Indeed.
Why did you choose this song?
I haven't dealt with a lot of loss in my life, but I have lost some friends and family members and that sort of thing. And they always come to mind whenever I hear the song. You know, the lyrics are clear and simple, and, you know, this is the end, my friend. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I do hear it, it brings up memories of all of the people in my life that I've lost over time. And it does, you know, when Jim Morrison is just saying it over and over again, you put yourself in his shoes, and I don't know what led him to write that song. But, you know, like, as much as I would want to be with somebody I'm close with before they went, I couldn't imagine actually being with somebody that I cared about and actually telling them that, you know,
yeah.
Having that moment to tell somebody, you know, this is the end. We're not going to see each other anymore. And watching that person pass or whatever it is that may have, you know, led them to write the song. So it's powerful. It's moving. And to me, it's a great way to remember the people that aren't around, you know, wishing that I had the opportunity to tell them, you know.
Absolutely.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end, no safety.
That was The Doors, This Is The End. Jim Morrison, a member of that Elite 27 Club. What a performer, fantastic singer, great band, great choice of music.
Thank you. Gone too soon.
Yes. Yeah.
Like a lot of the best.
Yes. We're coming to the end of the show, Chris. It's been a pleasure having you here, listening to you and getting to know you a little bit better.
Absolutely.
We've got one question we'd like to ask you before you head off. Where are you going now? Are you going to go to the woods, or are you going to go back to...
More than likely, I'll be going back to work after this.
To recreate some of those award-winning burgers.
To get the burgers ready for a big Saturday night. But if any opportunity arises, I will be in the woods.
Nice.
Yeah, well, we have one more question to ask you before you go, and
it is, how do you take your coffee?
Really, that's the question, huh? Light and sweet.
Light and sweet.
So a little bit of cream, a little bit of sugar?
The more sugar, the better. Any level of cream really works for me. Definitely sweet. I prefer half and half in my coffee.
Nice.
Ew.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Were you hoping, for a black?
Yeah, I'm a black coffee man.
Yeah.
Black, strong, preferably French, dark roast, with a little bit of sugar.
But Andy roasts his own beans. So, you know, he has a particular taste in coffee that I think most people are like, well, it's good, but it's so much work. And
my heart is missing several beats.
I've actually moved on to the energy drinks too. I can't lie. I'm definitely a fan of the Monster coffee drinks. They get right to the point.
I think I was kind of hooked on those for a while when I was doing construction work after work. This one afternoon, my buddy was like, "Yo, Mike, you should try one of these energy things." And I was like, "All right, I'll try it." And then I bought one, and it was pretty good, so I got another. And then before I knew it, in the afternoons, I was like, "Man, I could really go for one of those energy drinks."
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, no, oh, no, hey. No, cut off. No more of that.
I've never tasted one, thankfully, and I do not intend ever to taste one.
I'm pretty sure the ingredient taurine, which made Red Bull really popular, I'm under the impression, I haven't done the research, but I'm pretty sure that that's synthetic bull testosterone.
Get out of town.
Thus the name taurine.
Now you're talking bull, man. And on that note, Chris, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. This is Catskill Cabin Conversations with Mike and Andy. We just spoke with Chris Hack, owner of the Spinning Room Bar and Restaurant in Tannersville, New York. Stay tuned next month. We'll have another guest, same time, same channel.
Goodbye.
This is Chris Hack, and you're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations with Mike and Andy on WGXC 90.7. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from DMP for the theme music, and everyone else at WGXC.